6 p.m. Are we ready to get going?
Yes. I listened to a sort of like conspiratorial right-wing podcast and found this. And I also think Judge Kaplan's,
I'm hearing some background noise, so maybe there's somebody in the webinar that needs to mute. There we go. Yeah, I think Luke can mute. Luke has ultimate power, ultimate muting power.
Better to gavel.
Yeah, really? We ready to go, Luke? It still says we're in a practice session, so I'm... Oh, okay.
Okay. You want me to do it? I can start it.
Oh, Abby? Is Abby here? Oh, could you set Mark up on the Zoom? Thank you.
Do you want me to get started? Or wait till he gets set up?
I think we're okay to get started,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to hit start.
Recording in progress.
Well, welcome. A call to order this council meeting of the City of Atascadero, and I would invite you to join me in a pledge to our flag. Please stand as able. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Here.
Councilmember Darris?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Well, if you are attending here in person, we welcome you. If you are on the Zoom webinar, listening on 1230, watching on channel 20, listening on 1230 a.m., YouTube, the many ways that you can watch our city council meeting and participate, we welcome you. If you are not in Zoom or you're not here in person, but you would like to call in for public comment or community forum, then we invite you to do that using the following number. And I'll also let you know if you go to if you go to atascadero.org and pull up the agenda, this information, this call-in number will also be on the front page of the agenda. So that phone number is 669-900-6833. Once again, that number is 669-900-6833. The meeting ID is 889-2347-9018. Once again, that meeting ID is 889-2347-9018. And when you call in, let us know what item you would like to speak on. All right, I'd like to ask for a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Funk, a second by Councilmember Newsom. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Borrell?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. On to a closed session report. I'll ask our city attorney, Mr. Pirick, if there is any report from our April 27th closed session.
There is no reportable action.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent calendar. Consent calendar contains items that are considered to be routine or non-controversial by city staff and can be approved in one motion unless there's a member of the public or council wishing to pull or comment on an item. So I will look to my council members and see if there's anyone wishing to pull an item. There is none. Is there any member of the public? If you are here in person, if you are in the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand if there is something within the consent calendar that you wanted to comment on or pull. I am seeing none. I will bring it back to council for a motion.
I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Darris, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And now we will move on to updates from our city manager, Ms. Rickard.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight, first of all, I want to recap. We've had a couple of events here in town and been very busy the last couple of weeks. So let me start with Brew at the Zoo. At the end of April, the Charles Paddock Zoo hosted another successful event with the 9th annual Brew at the Zoo event. The event brought in a little over 800 people and about $22,000 in gross sales. This was our largest attended event ever, and it showcased a variety of adult beverages, food trucks, live DJs, great bands, fun contests, and of course our wonderful zoo animals themselves. We want to thank everyone that participated. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people dancing, a lot of people having a great time, mixed in with some education about saving animals from extinction, and overall just an amazing event. So if you missed it or you loved it and want to come back again, save the date for next year. It's going to be on April 27th, 2024 from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. And then, of course, we had our tamale festival this last Saturday. I will tell you that we broke all records with the 7th annual Tamale Festival event over Cinco de Mayo weekend. Warmer weather, a little bit more daylight, certainly added to our success. There were tamales, amazing fruit drinks, dancing horses, folklorica dancers, lots of bands. The event was enjoyed by people of all ages. It was a wonderful event. And it, too, had record sales results for most of the vendors that we've talked to. And a lot of vendors have reached out saying how wonderful it was and how successful the event was for them. These vendors include merchandise, adult beverages, food, and tamales. And while we await the final numbers in tamale sales, we broke records in ATM withdrawals, doubled in adult beverage sales year over year. I know that there were just a lot of people. I came, was out there around noon and thought, okay, I'll just grab something and sit on the lawn. It was hard to find areas even on the lawn, but things still moved, and it was a wonderful event, very positive. So more to come on when that will be held next year. And then upcoming, we have the May 14th, our Mother's Day Cookie Adventure at the zoo. This is always a popular event. So head to the Charles Paddock Zoo for their special Cookie Adventure event, included with regular admission on Mother's Day. And you get to enjoy a variety of cookies from local bakers and an opportunity to explore the zoo and its unique inhabitants. We also have on May 16th, Pedal to the Guardians. In celebration of Bike to Work Week, the city is hosting a Pedal to the Gardens, not Guardians, on Tuesday, May 16th from 7:30 to 9 a.m. in front of City Hall steps. Bicyclists of all ages are welcome. Light breakfasts and refreshments will be available, and this is done in partnership with San Luis Obispo Council of Governments and Cayman Cyclery. And then on May 20th, we have Lake Fest and Children's Day in the Park. That's going to be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Atascadero Lake Park. Activities for all ages include the famous cardboard boat regatta, which is a lot of fun, and races. There'll be 2-for-1 Charles Paddock Zoo coupons, a fishing derby, DJ music, great music from Way Out West Band, kids activity, a 50-50 raffle, food from a variety of vendors, and a lot of other vendors, too. Proceeds of the event will be used to benefit improvements in and around Atascadero Lake, along with resources for the Link Family Resource Center. This is put on by Friends of Lake. It's another nice event here in Atascadero. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions Council may have.
Thank you. You really, all of staff had to do such a tremendous lift, two weekends in a row with Brew at the Zoo and then Tamale Festival. That was a lot back to back, and just the numbers and being there at both events and seeing how much people enjoyed it, they were an absolute hit. And so thank you to Terry and all of you who helped. I know this was a big team effort. It was really, and I got to have tamales tonight before council, so it was an easy and tasty dinner. Any questions of staff? Seeing none. Thank you very much. All right, we'll move on to community forum. This is a portion of our meeting reserved for persons wishing to address the council on an item that is not on our agenda this evening, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we set aside a total of 30 minutes for community forum. Any topic brought up this evening does not become a subject of conversation at our meeting tonight, although I try to triage things to get answers after the fact as we can. So with that, any member here in person that wishes to speak, go ahead and come to the podium. We do ask that you state your name for the record. If you are in the webinar, you can raise your hand using that raise hand icon. If you're on the phone, I'm not seeing anyone on the phone, but if there is and I don't see them, you would press star 9. With that, community forum is open.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin. A couple of things. Tamale Festival was phenomenal. We need more vendors. The lines are crazy, but it was good. It was a blast. So I think this is the best one that our city's pulled off so far. On another note, those weed abatement notices went out to most of our residents. And I'm just curious once again why some addresses get them. I have an address that doesn't have a weed anywhere on it on Morrow Road. It's pretty much a happens to be a property with a restaurant on it and pavement, and I got one. I know some condos that have also gotten them, and they don't have weeds. So I'm just curious, and I know we increased it again by about 1,500 notices. So if we could maybe try and tone it back to the necessary ones and save some money, that would be great. Outside of that, it's fun seeing the weeds grow like mad. And on another note, I've heard from 3 council members that you missed me at the last council meeting. We took our daughter to Disneyland, so that takes precedence. Mickey over here. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, anyone wishing to speak on community forum? If you're in the webinar, do not wait to raise your hand. Thinking someone else will raise it before I do. No, raise your hand now. All right, I am not seeing any, so I'm going to go ahead and close community forum. Since we have no one else wishing to speak at the time, community forum will remain open until 6:41. At this time, council will move on to the next item on our agenda. If you do realize between now and 6:41 that there was something that you wanted to speak on, go ahead and raise your hand, or if you're here in the chambers, let one of staff know, and we will get to you at the next earliest possible opportunity. And Mr. Oslin, we do have weed abatement on the agenda, so we will get to that later tonight. All right. Thank you much. Let's see. So we will now go on to B1, our weed abatement hearing of objections. And I'm going to ask, because it is a public hearing, if we have any ex parte. No,
I think we all got okay. The email, a couple emails from individuals concerned about the the noticing
Correct.
Process.
Correct. Other than that, we will move this on to Fire Chief Casey Bryson.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I do have a short presentation. Hang on just a moment as I pull it up.
For those of you in chambers, you probably noticed that our big projector isn't working tonight. We're having a few technical challenges today, but we do have up here in front the very large screen. If you're sitting in back, you might have missed that, but if you wanted to get a front row seat, there's plenty of them available.
Sorry about this. Give us 1 second here.
Hey, my face could be frozen in worse looks, so trust me, I'm not too unhappy with that one.
Is it up? Okay, I'm going to go without it, and we'll see if we can work on it. It is on the queue. Sure, that'd be great. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started. So tonight, our public hearing is for weed abatement hearing of objections. This is basically the second piece of our weed abatement process. And just kind of as an overview, just to start it off, wildfires are a major threat here in our community. This is a community, whole community issue. So this is one part where we all help. And we jump in. I think I have my presentation now. Are you controlling, Laura? Okay, can you all see that right now? Okay, so weed abatement is probably the most critical component of our fuels management program. It basically gives us the opportunity to create a fuel break between neighborhoods. So we require a 100-foot cut of weeds around each house and 50 feet on the property line. So that creates these many fuel breaks. So neighborhoods all participate, all get to enjoy the weed cutting, but what it does is it keeps those fires small during the summer, whether it's a fire started by a vehicle, a structure fire that gets into the vegetation, illegal fireworks, whatever it might be. We try to keep that fire small so it gives the fire department time to arrive at scene and get that fire mitigated. So weed abatement truly is our most important event of wildfire preparedness that we have. Basically, a little bit on our process. We have 11,169 parcels. We inspected those all visually in mid-March. We know it was still raining in mid-March. So while our inspector was out, it was actively raining. We know people were probably not cutting at that point. So, and the timing of all this is pretty critical to get this to council to declare weeds a nuisance, to get it on the tax rolls, all of it. So it follows a very strict timeline. So that's why it starts in March. On April 11th, we brought it to council and we declared weeds a nuisance, declared by resolution. And that allows us to make those inspections and send out notices. So notices were mailed shortly after. And I'm just going to spend a minute on the notices. We actually mailed 5,655 this year, which is nearly 2,400 more than we have in years past. So a lot of our community received a notice. And what it is it's a legal process, a legal notice. At first glance, it looks like some sort of a violation. But I just want to assure everyone that it really is just that first courtesy notice. It does not mean you actively have a violation. It does not mean that you were out of compliance or are out of compliance. But just on that date, you either had weeds, which we all had in March while it was raining, or you have the potential. So you have a piece of property that is not completely asphalt. There is a potential. At some point, you may have weeds growing on that piece of property. So that's why so many more got it this year with that extra rain. Part of this legal process, too, is that we do not have the ability to go do the weed abatement process, have someone cut that property if that notice is not met. So we know that weeds are going to continue to grow. There's going to be regrowth, and there's probably going to be some recutting again and again. We don't have the ability to send the contractor out or work with property owners if that notice isn't sent. So that's part of that legal process. So just the rest of the process after June 1, we will be doing that second inspection, so that's when the weeds need to be maintained at 4 inches. It's not like the contractor goes out and immediately starts cutting. There's a little bit of time, a process, an inspection, and then we will make contact with the resident. They don't just show up If we can't make contact, we will put door hangers and attempt phone calls. So there's a little bit of a process there before we actually have a mower out. And I think that's really it. I just want to thank the community for their support. This is a big, it is a big deal. It's going to be a lot of mowing this year. There are a lot of weeds. We do have potentially a busy fire season. So thank you. If you have questions, we're happy to come out and do consultations. And we just appreciate your participation. And with that, I'll move to my recommendations. We have two. Council hear all objections to the proposed removal of vegetative growth and or refuse and allow or overrule any objections and authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the work of abatement. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Chief. For public certification, could you let us know? I mean, you said, you know, the parcels that have weeds or the potential to have weeds, but of course there are many parcels that have weeds or the potential to have weeds, but they don't get noticed. So what is that line that says this property gets a notice versus this property that does not?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there definitely are those properties that have a lot of cement. Maybe they're built out to the edge of the property line, or they don't meet that 50 feet, 100 feet setbacks around buildings and up to the roadway. So there are those that are extensively landscaped, and it's not something you're going to take a weed eater to, or it's built out with asphalt driveways and that sort of thing, and those typically wouldn't receive that notice. Now, I know there was the comment, I think it was asphalt all the way, and they received a notice. Now, just taking into mind that this is done by driving through town, done with GPS and on an iPad. There is the potential with GPS not catching up to where you're at, and there is the potential for some mistakes on which parcel is clicked on. I know we sent a notice to the police department, and I guarantee you they do not have weeds at the police department. So,
I don't know. Commander over there maybe hasn't kept up on that weed eating. No.
And no weed.
So there are
and
those.
No weed, yeah.
There are those potential mistakes that the parcel was clicked incorrectly. But just so you know, it's not a violation. We're not going to be coming out. If you have your weeds cut, we'll drive by and look, and you're good to go.
Thank you, Chief. And I appreciate those of you, because there are letters that we, as Councilmember Borbeau said, that we received, and people who are very concerned because they're very diligent with cutting their weeds, and they say, you know, I always do this, and why am I getting this notice? And so thank you for, you know, understanding our process. When we got back to you, you were also gracious, and so thank you very much for that. With that, I will see if there are any other Councilmember Darris.
Yeah, just one quick question. You mentioned that the number of notices sent out this year was more, just about double what it was last year, and that was probably a product of the fact that it was raining and just people hadn't mowed. I didn't realize you went out there and they literally drove up and down every inn and clicked on the. I thought you just sent it out blanketly to the potential lots, but is that what happened?
Yeah, there were, like I said, a lot more notices this year, 2,600, 2,400 more than last year. I think no one had been cutting at that point. It was still raining on that third week of March, so yeah. I don't think anyone had started, maybe a few people, so that's the reason for that increase. And we do, part of the legal process does require us to visually inspect, so that's why we drive the town.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Chief Bryson. If you could just clarify tonight, I see that we're hearing objections to the proposed removal of vegetation. Is this a time, if people are concerned that their individual property wasn't out of compliance in March or isn't out of compliance now, do they wouldn't need to make that case now because you're going to reinspect, right?
That is correct. So we will be out after June 1st with that true inspection. When they're out of compliance on June 1st, that's when we'd be arranging for the city hired contractor to arrive at their home.
Okay. And will you be using a more precise technology when you're doing the final notices so that we're not inadvertently tagging your next door neighbor for getting tagged for somebody else's weeds?
Yeah, we do have another option we are looking at, a different app that might be a little more accurate.
Great, thank you.
And I was curious that, you know, Chief, you mentioned we have to bring it to council, declare weeds a nuisance and do these things. Is there anything within the law where this process of, like, declaring weeds a nuisance can be You know, for example, like within one budget cycle, can you say weeds are a nuisance for the next 2 years? Or is it every year we have to say weeds are a nuisance?
We have certainly looked, Mayor, but we have not been successful in that. I know that Laura and Casey did spend quite a bit of time a few years back trying to figure out, could we do something? Could we send the courtesy notice to every parcel so we can save those time? A lot of those types of things, and the law is very specific, as it should be, right? You're going on people's private property and doing something to their property, and so there are very specific steps that the law requires the city to follow.
Okay. All right. I figured you guys had looked at under every rock, but thought I would ask. So with that, we will open up to public comment. If there's any member of the public wishing to speak who is here in the chambers or any member who is in the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand now, please.
Jeff Poslin, once again.
You already spoke on weed abatement.
I'm going to add to it on this one. I realize you drive by, and I'm going to stand corrected and say there are weeds in the front of the property on Morrow Road. However, I have checked into mowing them down or doing weed abatement, and I was told that I cannot get an encroachment permit from Caltrans to do that. Can somebody comment on that, please? Thank you.
What I'm hearing is we can bill Caltrans, correct? Any other member of the public? Sorry, I got to save that for afterwards. Any member of the public, in addition to Mr. Oslin, wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back to... We'll reopen public comment. Come forward to the lectern. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. My question is...
If you could you state your name for the record?
Okay. It's Anna. Hi.
Thank you, Anna. Yeah.
And so how do we hold Caltrans responsible for their, responsibility to clear the weeds on their right-of-way? Because I've noticed several places where they haven't done that. And they seem to decide that some places are more important than others when really it seems the higher risk for fire is in other places that they just don't get to.
Okay. It will answer all questions afterwards, so if there's anything else...
No, just that about the Caltrans right-of-way.
Okay. Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? All right, I'm seeing none, so we'll close public comment and bring that back to council and staff, and I will turn that over to our chief.
So Caltrans is actively cutting. They've been south of town. I think there's been some traffic heading into San Luis over the last few weeks. I can't tell you exactly when they will be through town, but they will be on 101 and 41.
All right. Thank you. Good to know all of our partners throughout the state are taking this seriously.
I have a question.
Council Member Bobo.
Along those lines, Casey, I assume that we, the city, of course, owning a lot of right-of-way, we're out taking care of it on our right-of-way and as well.
Yes, any of our city-owned lots are actually abated first, so our contractor hits those first, and he's been out already. So we're getting...
And on a typical neighborhood street in Atascadero that doesn't have sidewalk and may have weed growth out to the edge of the road, that is, even if that's in a right-of-way, that's still a responsibility of the actual property owner, correct?
That is correct. That's okay. The responsibility of the property owner.
And that would not be the case like in what Mr. Oslin references, which is if there's weeds that look like they're at the front of his property but they're actually on Caltrans property, then that's a Caltrans thing.
I believe... that private property is the property owner's. So when I'm thinking about Caltrans right away, we're talking along the highway, along the 101 freeway or the 41 freeway. But if there's private property leading right up to, say, Moore Road, that would be their responsibility, I believe.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to clarify, because if I'm a property owner on a roadway, it would be wrong of me to assume that, oh, the city's going to mow this last 5 feet out to the road, or maybe Caltrans will if I own property on 41. You see the signs like on when you do litter cleanup, like the fence along the freeway, state property, and that's actually their property, and they'll take care of that.
Correct.
Okay. And I just want to, you mentioned it, but I really want to emphasize, because I think it was the point of concern of one of our letter writers, is that, you went out and looked, it takes a while to gin up the letters and get them sent, so that by the time you did it, somebody had taken care of their weeds, and they're like, what, my lot looks perfect. So A, there's a little time frame lag there, but B, if you have vacant dirt, it has the potential to grow weeds. So you're you know, sending these notices to everybody, even if they, you know, tilled their lot a week before you sent the letter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where that potential comes right in, and it really gives us the ability to go back after June 4th or June 1st, maintain those 4 inches of weed. So we that gives us that ability to go back afterwards if there's regrowth.
Right. Okay. All right, thank you.
Would you like to make a motion?
Sure, I'll move that we approve staff's recommendation to authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the necessary weed abatement work.
I'll second the motion.
Motion by Councilmember Barbeau, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And now, drum roll. I see some happy people in the audience here in the building. On to our management report, the appointment of James R. Lewis as city manager. And I will turn this over to our amazing city manager, Rochelle Rickard.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I am very excited and very honored tonight to present a draft contract for city manager for Jim Lewis. Jim is an amazing leader. He's dynamic. He's caring. I've had the pleasure to work with Jim here at the city for 8 years, from 2004 to 2013. And with him as another city manager here in the county, he's been the city manager for the city of Pismo Beach from 2013 today, and he is willing to come and be our city manager here in Atascadero. Jim comes to us with a wealth of experience. I talked a little bit about where he's worked, but he's very active with the League of California Cities. He's been president of the city manager division for the league. He's been trustee for CCMF. He is active in the International City Managers Association, ICMA. He is active here in town. He's been a resident here in Atascadero since 2004, and he loves Atascadero. He's active in Boy Scouts and Kiwanis here in town. He was volunteering at Tamale Festival, picking up tables and helping out. That just is who Jim is. He does believe in servant leadership. And wants to serve our community. He's leaving a very wonderful community of Pismo Beach to serve his hometown, and that's really what's driving him to come and work here in Atascadero. While he's been in Pismo, he's accomplished untold number of things, but the Pier Project, the Shell Beach Streetscape Project, revitalizing their downtown. While he was here in Atascadero, he was the architect of a lot of our beginning redevelopment and downtown and revitalization things that happened. A lot of the seeds that he sowed have now borne fruit, and you can kind of see that, so he'll be able to continue that legacy. He's often a speaker at all sorts of trainings and events. And that's just because we all want to tap into that knowledge and that perspective that he has. So Jim is here with his family. His wife Debbie, his daughter Gracie, and son Troy. So they're all here tonight. And I am very pleased to offer for council consideration a contract with Jim Lewis for city manager. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Lewis, would you care to come forward and say a few words?
Speaking before you vote is always precarious. Mayor, Council, thank you. It's surreal to be in the building. When I came, the building had just had the earthquake damage, and I left right before it opened. So it's pretty neat to be here. It's a huge honor and privilege to be considered for city manager of my hometown. Thank you. It's really wonderful. And to have seen for 10 years the great staff and your leadership and what's happened here, I want to be a part of it. I don't want to watch it anymore. I want to get in and serve along these sides, great people, and look forward to it. So I am very excited. I have my youth advisory committee. Gracie's a varsity cheerleader at Atascadero High School, and Troy's a Cub Scout and football player and soccer player, so they'll advise me. My dear wife and life partner, Debbie, is we're in this together, our family. You'll see us in a lot of things, and we couldn't be more honored. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'm glad you added that, because at first I thought you came back just for the building. So, all right. Which I wouldn't blame you for that. All right. I will ask if we have any questions of city manager. No? All right. So before we have any deliberation and a vote, I will ask if there are, open this up to public comment. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? I will look to the webinar as well if you want to raise your hand. I am not seeing any. Oh, here one comes forward. Welcome.
Honorable Mayor and Council, my name is Ben Fine, and I had no intention of speaking this evening. However, somebody made the grave mistake of inviting me up to their Cub Scout troop to speak to their Cub Scouts this evening, so I was in town, and it was convenient, so I thought I would come and talk to you since I was already here. I wanted to make sure you weren't sold a bill of goods with Mr. Lewis. Should you approve this contract this evening, you're going to get a man of very high integrity and honesty, a man like I've never seen. You're going to get a man that's going to push your staff to do their absolute very best every day. You're going to get a man who's going to build consensus amongst the community as much as he can. You're going to get a man who's going to work his butt off every day to achieve your goals. You're going to get a man who will be absolutely devoted to your community, who, as your current city manager said, he's a part of your community. He's active in his church. He's active in the Boy Scouts. He's active in Kiwanis. He's active in Rotary. He's not recognized at the regional level. He is, but not only at the regional level, but also at the state level. He's recognized as the best of the best in his industry. With all that said, I can only hope that you don't approve his contract tonight. And I say that selfishly because I am the Director of Public Works for the City of Pismo Beach. My comments this evening represent my own and not the City of Pismo's. But over the last 10 years, I've worked very closely with Jim. He has been a mentor. He has been a friend. It's going to be very sad for us to lose him. But should you approve the contract tonight, I give my personal promise and bet my reputation he will be the best city manager that you ever have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fine. Any other member of the public wishing to speak?
This is that point in the wedding ceremony where you say, speak now or forever hold your peace.
Speak now or forever hold your peace, right. We could also look at Rochelle saying, last chance. You don't have to retire. All right, so we'll go ahead and close public comment. I will tell you that as soon as Jim had told his council, I knew it was coming on that Monday, and I look down and I see a caller ID from Mayor Waggy, who's a friend. And he had just nothing but congratulations and kind words. Obviously, you know, missing and disappointed and all of that. But over and over, I think I've talked and seen him three times since then. And he had nothing but positive things. Jeff Straw down at RTA, just anyone I'm talking to throughout the county, is telling us the very thing we know, that we have made the best decision for Atascadero at this point moving forward. For all of you in the public, we want you to know that when, as a council, we went to make this decision, first and foremost, we know that things get done in this city because of the incredible staff that we have. Nothing gets done without the folks you see here at the dais and the folks that you don't see here, but that are working every day on your behalf to have the parks working, the roads cleaned and repaired sometimes. Not because of them, but because of our funds, but, you know, repairing the roads, our police, our fire, tamale festivals, I mean, you name it, everything here gets done because of these people. And we knew that whoever was the next city manager had to have that same view, just like Rochelle does. And that was first and foremost with Jim. He knows how important our staff is, and he's excited to be engaged with all of us and with our team, and to really continue moving us forward, because we've been moving in such a good direction, and I know all of you are seeing it. We're all hearing it from you, and we were all so excited about it. And Rochelle, you have been a part of all of that. There is nothing you can see out in Atascadero that doesn't have Rochelle's stamp on it. And now to bring Jim in at this point, and keep us going. We are so confident that he is the right fit. So with that, I will see if there are any other comments and eventually a motion.
If I may, I am very pleased to recommend that the council approve, make the motion that the council approve the employment agreement for Mr. Lewis to serve as our next city manager. And Rochelle, that means we are still going to miss you very much. That's my motion.
I'll second that.
I'll second. We have a motion by Council Member Darris and a second by, I think I heard Council Member Borbo first. So, and any other comments that want to be?
Before we take the vote, I just want to say that this was a unanimous and enthusiastic decision by this council. We are pleased to be welcoming home a very highly decorated homeboy, in the best sense, to lead us. And note that we're seeing, you know, a change in style with this, and it's, people should recognize that that doesn't reflect badly on Rochelle, who has led us so incredibly capably throughout her career and for all of this time as city manager. But it reflects the strength, the team that is developed here, where we have every single department works together rather than in you know, little fiefdoms or silos fighting each other, even if occasionally the fire department does send the police department a weed abatement notice. We still have a remarkable level of teamwork here that you'll see reflected in the general plan work that comes later on tonight. And we are getting another capable leader who is going to be leading a very balanced team with a rich variety of styles. Each one of those people contributes tremendously to the leadership of the city. So we welcome you with enthusiasm.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to add that, you know, many times when a city manager who's been here as long as Rochelle and has done as much as Rochelle leaves, it's very concerning of how you're going to replace them. You know, she's built a great team, and so the team is concerned. And the city will, you know, hire a professional recruiting firm, spend a lot of money, spend months trying to find somebody they think will fit. This is the only person that the city council hires directly. And so it's a big deal for us. But we were so fortunate that Jim was available and all the other things everybody said. And so we're just very excited about that. And I'm really pleased you brought your family and your kids to hear how cool you are, because they may not think that at home. I don't know. So welcome aboard, Jim. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Kind of hard to speak after them. They say so many amazing things. I just want to say welcome to the family.
Thank you. And with that, roll call, please.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
And Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Congratulations. So until July 1st, good luck in Pismo. No. All right. Did you want to get a picture or anything, Jim? Yeah. All right. Why don't we do that?
Thank you.
All right. Now we are on to our next good news item, our general plan update. And I will turn this over to Community Development Director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm going to give you a couple of details of where we're at, because I know it's been some time since you've heard from us about the general plan. We'll give a moment just for everyone to clear out, though.
The fan club needs to dissipate, right?
I mean, it's a big event. This is. I'm not sure how I can.
Phil, would you like for us to maybe take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back?
Let's just do that. I think it's a big transition.
Why don't we do that?
Let's just take a quick.
All right, I think we are ready to come back. Look at that, I said 5 minutes and it's been four, not bad. All right, so on to item C2, our general plan update project. Director Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. As I know, it's been some time since we've talked to you about the general plan, but there's been a lot of work going on in the background. What we've been doing is working on this big report called Existing Conditions. And it's really a report that doesn't require decision-making. It's basically what's on the ground today, what's out there, what do we have in our city? And it's been taking us a lot of time to get through all those reports. But what I'd like to do, before I tell you too much and ruin the consultant's presentation, we have MIG here tonight, right here in the city of Atascadero. We've got Roxanne and Dan and Laura. They've been working with our team on a daily basis, pulling together some components of the general plan. And tonight we're going to talk to you about a fairly big topic, but also it's in draft form, so I'm going to give you that heads up, and that's the vision and guiding principles that we're going to talk about a little bit, and we're also going to talk about a little bit of work that we've been doing and what we're going to be doing next as we get into the actual writing of the general plan, which really hasn't started yet. But with no further ado, we're going to go through a little bit of a presentation that talks about the general plan vision and guiding statements, which is that next process that we're currently working on in draft form. So let's go. Dan, take it away.
Thank you, Phil, and good evening, Mayor and Council members. Nice to see you again. It's been a month and a half or so, I think, the last time I was in town. So tonight, as Phil mentioned, we really want to get Council's feedback, reaction, refinements to this draft vision guiding principles, but I want to step back a little bit and not quite that much. There we go. And just talk a little bit about the process for the members of the community and also for council as well. You know, this is a multi-year, about a two-year process to update the general plan. It's a big effort, a lot of staff involvement, a lot of consultant involvement, but also a lot of council and community involvement as well. And the general plan, again, really is the overarching guide or constitution for the city for land use decisions, transportation improvements, infrastructure. It frames all the guiding policy for decision making, and because this is a big process, we sort of move it into bite-sized chunks. And tonight is really the culmination and discussion around the end of phase two, which is discovery and visioning. And as part of that process, as Phil mentioned, the consultant team and staff have been working on existing conditions report. It's a very comprehensive inventory of land uses on the ground, infrastructure issues, wildfire, safety hazards. It's policy neutral, it's just data, but it's a very important initial piece as we start thinking about challenges, opportunities, but also assets to build upon as well. And as part of this process, and I know council was very involved in this, we had a series of open houses, different discussions with community leaders, discussions with council members. So there's also, in addition to that technical existing conditions piece, a discussion with the community about opportunities for the future, how the city would, should, could grow, what issues to address, jobs, housing, balance, a lot of these really big, important topics. And tonight, and we'll talk about a little more detail, the first big piece of this is the draft vision and guiding principles. And if you think of the general plan as a document, this is the highest level component of the general plan. It's really framing the vision from the community and council on how Atascadero should grow in the future, what things should be focused on. But as we go further in this process, we're going to get more detail and more detail and more detail. And so tonight, again, is this higher level as we end this second phase of the project. But as we jump into the next phase, alternatives, we'll start to get more in the detail on the how. But again, a reminder of a few things, and for the community as well, we do have a comprehensive website that has information, materials, summaries, public comments. It's a Atascadero 2045. You can actually sign up for email notifications as well. We try to have this website be a one-stop portal for all things related to the general plan project. Here are some images of our community open houses. We actually had a whole series of open houses over 2 days at City Hall. We had around 80 to 90 people participate, which was fantastic. Community members, business owners, property owners, members of staff. I think we also had 5 dogs and 3 sheep was the final total. There's some photos of the sheep. They were fantastic. They attracted people to the open house. It was great. But most importantly, we got tons of comments and ideas around challenges and issues, but also around opportunities or ways to address those challenges and issues. And as we mentioned, we're in the process of refining the existing conditions report, the big voluminous document, but we already presented the community the atlas, which is really a summary of the key takeaways from that document as well. And this was part of the open house, and we had a lot of feedback from that. And real quick on the existing conditions report, this is used in really two purposes during this general plan update process. One, which is important right now, it's informing the planning process, or as we're thinking about alternatives, solutions, options for the future, it's helping to inform it with factual information, an understanding of everything on the ground today. Eventually, it will also be the existing settings piece of the environmental analysis that will be prepared on the general plan itself. So it has a dual role, but very important roles from a technical standpoint as we go through the project. And a big thanks to staff. Every department has weighed in on topics and chapters. We've had a lot of refinements, and it's really becoming a great customized document for Atascadero. But also really important to this is your council members, your strategic planning session, which I had the benefit of attending and hearing a lot of feedback and comments as well. But all of you saw the volumes of comments and community ideas that were gathered through our process. And so during your strategic planning session, you really framed a mission statement for Atascadero, as well as these true north statements and some of the strategic priorities. So all of this information we have really used working with staff as a starting point for the general plan's vision and guiding principles. We want to build and provide a little bit more detail on some of the things that were discussed during your session and really start to organize this around general plan topics like economics, fiscal, safety, health. And so the goal of the vision statement is, again, really to reflect these ideas, thoughts, desires from the residents, business community, other stakeholders and people in the community, but also council, planning commission as well. And the vision statement, again, this is the highest level of the general plan, the most aspirational piece of the general plan, really is intended to express the community's desire for what Atascadero's future is. So it's almost a way of thinking of in 20 years or 25 years, where do we want to be as a community, and how does that get translated to land uses and quality of life and community character and health? Ultimately, as we go through this process, though, and we get into more detailed goals, policies, strategies, actions, implementation programs, again, the how component of the general plan, all of those will be evaluated or weighted by the vision statement. You know, are they actually achieving and implementing that vision statement? The guiding principles build on that vision statement and build on council's input as well, but they're framed and more focused on topics. And we started discussing with staff, really organizing these around potential general plan chapters or elements. So community character and form, economic development and fiscal health, and so on. So we're really creating guiding principles that provide a little bit more detail on that, on the vision. Again, really focusing on the what or why of the future, but organizing them around general plan chapters. So as we move into these future phases of the project, we can start organizing goals, policies, actions. You know, we're starting to build the bones of the framework of the general plan. And before we get into this piece right here and the discussion on the guiding principles and the vision statement, as we're sort of coming to an end of phase two, tonight we're also sort of launching into phase three, which is alternatives development. And we actually have an all-day series of meetings with staff tomorrow to really think through that and to start framing that. But the alternatives process will really start the discussion on how. How are we implementing the vision? What are some of the options or alternatives, policy options? And as we start to frame those, we want to come back to council, view that detail, make sure it looks good. But it's also a important community discussion as well, to really be thinking about those alternatives. And importantly, think about the trade-offs. So as we go through this next phase, which is kind of the core of the general plan update process, as we start crafting alternatives over the next few months and getting council feedback and refinements on those, we'll also start to do some additional analysis on things like mobility, infrastructure, fiscal health, economic health, so we can start looking at and evaluating some trade-offs around different ways to implement the vision. So that's a little precursor of where we're heading in this process, but tonight, again, is this big picture, overarching framing of vision. And with that, I'd like to actually pass it over to Laura to talk a little bit more about tonight's discussion.
Thanks, Dan. Madam Mayor, members of the City Council, thank you for having us here this evening. I'm Laura Stetson. I've been working very closely with your staff. More on the background, you've seen Dan as the face of all this, and I've been helping the team from the side, but I wanted to be here this evening because this is an important launching point for what the rest of the general plan is going to say in the vision and guiding principles. I wanted to kind of lay out some ground rules for discussion this evening, or some direction, if you will, and however you'd like to facilitate the meeting and have us assist. But the first thing to notice, as Dan mentioned, is that we have structured the guiding principles around the possible general plan chapters. If you think some modification needs to be made to those, if you want to combine things, that's perfectly fine. We had to start someplace, and so we wanted to have, it's easier to react to something than to come before you and ask you to create something. And so there's some flexibility there, and we wanted to make sure that that's understood. The vision and the guiding principles certainly build on the mission and, more than anything, the True North statements. And so that you can see that we have put more detail into the True North statements based on additional feedback from the public during a lot of what we've heard through lots of voices. Not the sheep didn't say anything. We didn't listen to them, but the folks who were at the workshops, we did listen to very carefully. A third thing, the guiding principles, if you want to think about what is a guiding principle? What should it be doing? They need to be the lenses through which you will make future decisions. So if something comes before you, a land use decision, a decision to expand the sewer treatment plant, do we want to widen this road, improve this particular interchange, working with Caltrans, does it meet the guiding principles? So that's the function that they serve. And as we were looking at them again a little bit more this afternoon, we were thinking, you know, some of them are probably too detailed to be guiding principles. There's some good information in there, but maybe it's the how, and what we're focused on tonight is the what. And so if there's something in there you think, that's a great idea, but we don't think it needs to be in the guiding principles, we'll pull it out. We'll put it on our to be discussed later board, or, you know, to be included in the general plan. So there's no, you know, guidebook as to exactly what needs to be in the guiding principles other than these are the what. What are we going to be using to make our decisions in the future? We're not asking for votes tonight on each of these. We'd like this to be a fairly free-form discussion. Are they too redundant, too granular? How do we make them less granular? How do we make sure that all of the ideas that are important are reflected in some way in the guiding principles under one topic? So however you want to massage these to take some things out and talk about them later, say, you know, that's a policy, that's a program, that's an action statement, that's great. Nothing wrong with doing that. If you think, for example, that there was something under the park and rec discussion that mirrors something that's in community character or public facilities, we can figure out ways to merge those. We don't want to wordsmith things tonight. We're looking for general direction on what needs to be put off for a later discussion, what needs to be raised to the top level, and we'll go back and rewrite those and come back to you to buy off on them, making sure that it says and is reflective of what you've and the public have shared with us tonight. So what we'd like to do is to go through them in terms of starting at the top, and probably the more difficult one is the community character discussion, and have you give us input, Madam Mayor, if you'd like to take these in chunks and get feedback from the community on the, you know, pieces of them, that's fine, however you want to go tonight. We've got three people taking detailed notes, and Dan and I will help facilitate the discussion for each of the topic areas.
Thank you, Laura. Is there anything else, Director, you want to say before we start?
Just generally, if you have questions before we do start, and then what we'd like to do is we'd kind of like to go through each one of these sections one at a time, but also, you know, willing to go whichever way you like. But okay. I think I just want to also emphasize just that this is sort of an open discussion at this point. We're still looking for general comments. It's an early draft, and nothing's going to be set in concrete after tonight. We'll probably have a little more homework to do.
Yep. Okay, thank you. So, Laura, to pick up on what you were saying, just as an example, and I'm glad that you said this, under community character and form, like the second bullet, it said protect the unique character of established neighborhoods by prioritizing infill development that respects the Atascadero aesthetic. So it seems like that by prioritizing might be a program that is under a policy, but it's not necessarily a big. So when you were saying that we noticed that maybe some of these got granular, is that what you mean here?
That's exactly correct. In fact, in my notes, I have written protect the unique character of established neighborhoods. I put a slash and I said what, and then the rest of it is a how.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started thinking, we've got some hows in here and we want to come back to the higher level.
Okay, good.
We just got excited in writing these,
right,
and got ahead,
right,
of ourselves.
And so I know I noticed that. I'm sure that my colleagues did as well. So what I'd like to do is I think a community character and form we can have as one discussion. And then I'll combine some of these as we go along so that we're not having eight different things. Some of them can be combined. And then maybe at the end, we can just have a brief discussion on the vision, not wordsmithing it, but maybe give a little feedback to end the night with. How does that sound?
That sounds great. One thing that I did want to point out, too, is the kind of the subtitles under each of those major topic areas really get to the heart of what that particular topic is covering. So for example, because we're starting with community character and form, protect the city's character-defining qualities as the community evolves. I felt that that's a great overarching statement of what these further guiding principles are digging into, maybe a little bit too much. And so that's what we're looking for you is, what level do you want to keep it at, and to give us that direction, but making sure that it's capturing the right direction for Atascadero.
Yep. And then within those bullet points, you consider those to be sort of a combination of the what and the how that would be policy and program once we get in, or goal policy program is somewhere within that three-tiered setup in general.
Exactly
plan.
So.
Okay. All right. That's very helpful. Thank you. Okay, so we'll start with community character and form. And what I want to do is we'll start just with questions from council, and then once we have questions, we'll go out to the public on this item, and then we'll bring it back and give any input. So I'm going to kind of switch off going from left to right and moving around. So why don't we start with Councilmember Darrah's on this one, and we'll kind of come down. Any questions? No?
I do have a couple questions. First, just to clarify something for me, we're talking first about community character and form. You list these eight things, I guess, community character and form, economic development, fiscal health, et cetera. And you talk about the general plan topics that will be chapters or elements. Now, I'm used to thinking of, you know, the key chapter or element, I guess, in a general plan being the land use element. Is community character and form just a new name for the land use element? And are there any new elements here? Because I thought we only had seven. Some of these are just name changes that the state probably dictated or something.
Well, we can sort of name our chapters of our general plan whatever we like, as long as they contain the subject matter of the required elements of the general plan guidelines that are put out by OPR, the state. So, yes, I think the answer to your first question is yes. Land use would be in community character and form. And I don't know if Laura wants to add that, but essentially you can see the sections in each of these sort of, you know, chapters.
Right. Okay.
And I think even these are subject to change in your input and the public's input in terms of these sections that we will create ultimately of the general plan. And this is, like Laura was mentioning earlier, this is our first approach at beginning to sort of highlight what these sections might be.
And you can combine them, and you can call them whatever you want, but the state says you got to address these things.
That's correct. There's
gotcha.
Six or seven pages of things that you have to address, and it's nice to tailor them. And one thing I did want to point out on community character and form, you mentioned technically land use is what it addresses, but it's important to address not just the two-dimensional what's on the land, but how does it look in three-dimensional mm-hmm. and fit in context with its neighbors?
Mm-hmm. And so moving to the several bullets under community character and form, you know, I don't really have any particular questions specifically about them. What I'm wondering is, you know, these are kind of overarching statements. They're not intended to be specific, and that's partly what we're talking about is maybe not, you know, don't try to get too specific. But what I'm wondering is, it seems to me that I've certainly seen, maybe not necessarily in this city, but elsewhere, reading articles how, you know, somebody wants to sue over a project, and they say, "See here, you know, this in your general plan, you said your guiding principle down here, number 12, and you're not doing that." Is there any danger in having too many of these things to where they might be potentially contradictory? I know they can be interpreted many different ways by many different people, but is there any danger or a trap? As far as having too many of these things to where could it be interpreted in any way, and then somebody is going to, like, anything you say can and will be used against you later?
And I know the city attorney's on the line if he wants to weigh on this. I think there's more of a danger if you're doing something that is not stated. I mean, if it's stated and you're not, well, let me back off from that. It's okay to have guiding principles, not all of which are immediately implemented, because you might not have a project come before you that would implement a guiding principle, or somebody can't come back and say, you're not doing this. What's probably what folks would come and say, the decision you're making is not consistent with the guiding principle
because it's
the
not there.
Plan.
Because it's, I mean, so if we wrote, you know, a general plan 20 years ago and somebody comes along and say, well, you never mentioned broadband in your... you know, in your general plan anywhere. There, why are you digging up the streets or, you know, wanting to acquire right away, whatever, for this thing called broadband that's never mentioned in your general plan?
And if you had said something like improve community communications and connectivity, mm-hmm. broadband could fall under that category.
Right. But I'm saying you might not have mentioned that because it never, you know, it never occurred to your,
exactly.
you know, 30-year-ago brain that, you know, enhancing that kind of communication might be
a thing. So I'm not. I don't really have any specific questions. Just concerned about, setting ourselves up for later being, oh well, we should have said that here, or we shouldn't have said that there, and you know, what's the risk of that, if you will. So that's my last question, Mayor.
Yeah, I think we'll, with our experts and legal counsel, we will do the best we can to pull together a general plan in accordance with law that fits with our community. So is that a legal enough answer, Brian?
Yes, that was very legal. I would just add to that that there is a process to address the concerns of Council Member Barbeau. When you have a project, it goes land use, for example, it goes to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission needs to make a determination of whether that project is consistent with the general plan or not. And that would be the place to have that discussion. And if for some reason the project was not consistent with the general plan, then there may need to be a need to apply for a general plan amendment, which would then address that issue. So there are mechanisms to resolve the issues that have been raised.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, staff, for bringing this forward tonight. Can you clarify, since housing is not an element that's listed in what we're talking about tonight, the relationship with this work, with the housing element that we separately addressed as a council earlier?
Well, two things. First of all, our housing element is good now for another 6 years. It's about 2 years old, and is not actually a part of this particular update, but it will be incorporated into this general plan update and be a component. And I think I'm going to lean on my experts around me as to how that would fit into these particular sections. If we had, go ahead.
I'll jump in here as well. So the housing element is a chapter of the general plan. It runs on a different schedule due to state requirements. That's the short answer. But another thing that's important to think about, and I think the last two questions are related to this, is anything, and this is I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV, but this is the state legal, overarching legal requirement of general plans, is everything inside the general plan has to, by law, be internally consistent. So the city just went through a process to update one of the chapters of the general plan, which is housing. As we go through the process to update the other chapters, we'll make sure there's nothing inconsistent in policy or programs or other directions with the housing element. So that's one piece of it. Another important piece of it related to just the overarching guiding principles is anything that is put into the general plan ultimately by council has equal legal weight across different chapters, different elements as well. So something in the land use chapter doesn't supersede something in an economic development chapter or the housing chapter. It all needs to work together.
Okay, so it's germane for us to be talking about the way housing and commercial uses relate to each other when we're talking about this, or the mix of housing types and things that we might need in the community, and that will be ultimately reconciled with the housing element that we've passed. But we've got to go. It's germane for us to go ahead and talk about that as part of a vision that gets to 2045 versus a housing element that was, we're halfway through an 8 or 10 year plan.
Right, right. And I'll pass to Laura here, who's one of our experts, or maybe Phil wants to head us as well. I'll just say often housing elements address affordable housing and state requirements mostly. So that doesn't mean we're not addressing other housing topics or issues through land use or other general plan components.
And anything that we're doing with the land use plan needs to comport with the city's commitment to meet its regional housing needs allocation. And so we can't do anything to the land use that's going to upset the commitments that have been made already to make sure that there is adequate land available for housing development.
And it looks like we have a vision and guiding principle that touches on this topic in the community character section. As you can see, the fourth bullet down there, that really would cover your housing element. That's about as specific as we'd want to get in terms of talking about that issue in this particular chapter.
On the last bullet, it speaks to respecting natural landforms, trees, water features. As Charles Barbeau was talking about land use, how does that play into zoning, commercial versus open space? I know some of what we're anticipate developing with new developments coming on board, we're going to change the aesthetics of the way certain parts of the city look. How does that work into zoning?
Well, this particular broad statement gives us a lot of latitude. So when we get into policy development, that's where we'd really establish, you know, what areas of the city that the community and the council really, you know, hold highly to protect, and what areas are ready for development, and what should be zoned for development, what should be zoned for housing, what should be zoned for commercial land uses, what should be zoned for public uses, what should be left as open space. You know, for example, looking at places like the Three Bridges Trail or Stadium Park. So that part of our zoning, that part of our general plan and land use discussion, will get into those policies. And as a third step to that is your actual municipal code that actually adopts those zoning regulations and puts in place all of those standards that implement the programs, that implement the policies. So this is way up on top of the tree right here, with these vision statements way up here. Then we'll get into policy development, then program development, and then several years later, or hopefully a year or two later, the actual zoning update that has all of those actual municipal code items. So it's quite a tree that we have to build.
So you're saying this is the top of the tree, we'll get down to the bottom when we're done.
Or it's the bottom, we're just planting the seed and we've got to watch it grow. Maybe I should use that analogy.
Or we're almost the clouds that are going to rain on the tree. So thank you, because you know that we need this from time to time to keep pulling us up, so I appreciate what you're doing, and it looked like maybe you have another question.
Well, I did, but I was going to raise my hand again, but Councilmember Newsom asked.
But it was probably too specific and detailed, and we don't need to go there.
No, well, she asked almost the exact question I was going to ask, so I was going to ask about the respect natural landforms, respect as an example of how, you know, limiting does that become. Now, in other words, later, you know, we approve a project that involves cutting down some trees or, you know, removing some drainage or something. I don't want somebody to come, oh, we are not respecting your landform, you know, your natural landforms or whatever. But you're saying that, I mean, this is just a broad picture, of course, what we want, but we'll obviously come up with the details and the policies and whatever that implement that.
Yeah. So when we use our everyday practice of our general plan, we're typically not going to be referring back to these broad statements as much as we're going to be referring to the actual programs of the general plan. But actually, even more so, we're going to be dealing with the actual ordinance. For example, we're going to be dealing with what is allowed to happen in an open space district. What are we allowed to do with our tree preservation ordinance? What are we allowed to do in relation to our creeks? You know, what kind of ordinance have we got adopted that deals with that? That's really where it's going to happen. And so when we adopt laws in the future, when we amend our municipal code, we have to make sure it's consistent with those programs that are adopted in our future general plan. But these broad vision statements will guide the development of those programs. But this has a lot of latitude. It's intended to have a lot of latitude. So I think it could be interpreted very broadly as to what that respect really means. Respect might mean restore something to be a natural habitat after we've modified it for human, you know, needs.
Yeah, I don't need to get.
Let me, if I could pause us for a moment, because what I think I'm hearing from you, and this was going to be my question, is that these guiding principles are going to help with goal, policy, program. These don't necessarily end up in the general plan. These are sort of the notes overall that are going to lead to the general plan. We're not going to say, here are the guiding principles we use to get here, so that someone can come and say, well, I don't think this guiding principle quite, because as we said, some of this is how and some of it is what.
I think we would publish these in the introduction chapter of our general plan. And like, for example, today's general plan has a set of smart growth principles, and they're published in the introduction chapter of our general plan. We typically don't really refer to those very often when we're comparing a project or when we're comparing policy development. Mm-hmm. Instead, our first step is to look at those policies and programs that we adopted that are supposed to reflect that broad vision statement. But yes, these would end up.
But I guess because these are some more specific in the how and the what, as we said, they're not necessarily the
they're not all the overarching.
And that's where we still need to do some wordsmithing on that. I think that's what it is.
Totally
this is our first look. We realize these need some work, but we want to work together with you to get there.
Okay, so we'll work together to get there. You'll wordsmith it later, but these will come back and be in the front of the general plan as some sort of a preamble to how we got there. Here's the road to getting here.
And let me give you an example of the city of Pasadena, where I've lived for many years. They have, I think, 12 guiding principles for the entire general plan, and they are cross-cutting against topic areas, and that's one approach. And one that sticks in my mind is Pasadena will be a place where people can get around without cars. What does that mean? Well, that means we're going to provide transit service. It means we're going to put land uses close to each other that are symbiotic. It can mean all kinds of things. So you can take the guiding principles at a much higher level and have them be cross-cutting rather than specific to the topic areas. That is absolutely an option as well. So if you feel that there's too much detail in here and there's some more basic key things, that's also an approach. And that's the kind of feedback that we're looking for tonight is, do you want something that is at a much higher level? And what are other ideas that we need to save for later discussion?
Okay. Are we complete with questions at the moment?
Yeah.
Sorry, Councilmember Verbeau. Added on to mine, I just have one quick question on clarifying infill development on number two. Can you define that a little more?
Infill development consists of development that is between uses that are already provided with the levels of service that are there. So it's not extending services beyond where they exist today, but focused development where it's most efficient to provide goods and services.
More about complementing of services.
And for example, it would be along El Camino Real. If you have a choice between developing a property, planning for a property along El Camino Real versus something that's in a more outlying area, that the priority would be towards those infill areas where it's easier to provide city services.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so this is just one section. Our community character and form protect the city's character-defining qualities as the community evolves. So what I'd like to do is ask, go ahead and open up to public comment. So if there's any members of the public wishing to provide any input or ask any questions as it relates to community character and form, go ahead and come to the podium. And if you're on the webinar, you can raise your hand. If anyone's on the phone, star 9. But Luke, I don't think I see anyone on the phone, correct? Just webinar participants. Okay. Anyone wishing to give input or any on this community? No. Not this section. Okay. So we'll close a public comment and bring that back to council for some brief input. So I'll come the other way now. Councilmember Newsom.
As we were going through strategic planning, I like to simplify things. I think there's a lot going on in here, and I think a lot of it is, I don't want to say confusing or contradictory. I just think it's so much for us to digest, and this strategic planning go-around, we just tried to simplify. I'm not sure we need of this great detail at this point.
I do have a number of specific comments that I looked at with this, and just to assure my colleagues, it's the only one that I have more than one or two things to comment on. So naturally, we start with the one that's the most complicated. First of all, I would suggest that we add a bullet just to clarify things, which is...
Did you not hear the simplifying from Councilmember Newsom? Just teasing.
Yes. I think this helps us anyway, to create effective neighborhoods by considering residential and commercial uses in concert with one another, so that neighborhoods are designed to accommodate the population necessary to support the kinds of commercial experiences desired there. And new uses are not inconsistent with the orderly growth and development of the neighborhood. That's a bit of a bullet, and we can shorten that. But I think if we just think about creating effective neighborhoods by considering residential and commercial uses together, I'm concerned because we have a housing element that is separate and it sort of has its own track that we need to consider what it is. This is something that Max Zappas brought to us, you know, and talk with us about it, that certain kinds of neighborhood serving commercial developments need to have enough population density around them or they don't happen. And then everybody gets frustrated because the neighborhood market that we wanted to have, you know, at location X never happens because we didn't allow enough population in the neighborhood to make that kind of commercial use work. So and that just gets everybody frustrated.
If I may, I think where I see this, though, is in Strengthen El Camino Real by encouraging synergy and balancing commercial and residential uses that support long-term viability of a corridor, which to me is what you're saying. That's what we're trying to achieve. So, if some wordsmithing needs to happen on that, I'm more than happy to have that done, not tonight. But sure. I think that's where I would see that. Laura?
I'm hearing perhaps, Councilmember Funk, that you're looking to expand that perhaps beyond El Camino just in a broader sense, so not just focus on El Camino, but create complete neighborhoods. With,
exactly.
I just wrote down create effective neighborhoods with a mix of complementary uses and add on to that. But I see where you're going with that. Looking beyond El Camino Real.
Right. I was concerned that the El Camino Real bullet, which is related, is very specific to the master plan that we've had for that area or the guidance we have for it. And I think just as a general principle, we really need to think about those two things together so that we develop the kinds of expectations and we develop something that it is economically sustainable for what it is that people want to experience in that
neighborhood. I hear what you're saying.
I was going to say, though, Mary, you commented about, well, gee, doesn't that cover here in this particular one? I look at all of the things I heard Mayor Pro Tem Funk say, and I feel like they're kind of sprinkled throughout a multiple of these things in terms of, you know, promoting land uses toward achieving an overarching goal of better jobs, housing, and balance, ensuring building streetscapes in public places in the more urban parts are more designed to create more walkable neighborhoods and business districts. So I hear everything Mayor Pro Tem Funk is saying, but I think they're parceled out in these existing statements. You know, they're not all contained in that Strengthen El Camino one, but they're kind of covered, if you will, in these other ones. And so to go to what Councilmember Newsom said, I'd be a little reluctant to start adding new ones. I mean, I'm not, you know, dreadfully opposed to it, but I would be reluctant to do it.
Okay. And so potentially if there's some wordsmithing within here that can encompass that, we're not opposed to it, but let's not keep adding more and more bullets.
And I'm almost thinking that there might be able to come out if there's something that's covered in a much more extensive statement, we can do that. So
yeah,
if and some come in, some can come out.
Sure, and I'll provide the text that I have, the explanatory text, that I offered in the expectation that much of that is going to go into the next level of detail as we work on that.
Do you have further questions?
A few other comments. As we think about the fourth bullet where we talk about a range of housing types, just include raising families in that as an element. We take that for granted, but it wasn't called out, and I do think that that's providing a good place for people to grow up is essentially what we're doing in this, in our thing. I would suggest on the second bullet that we simplify by eliminating that entire last, you know, the by prioritizing phrase, and that we change protect to respect in line with the discussion we just had about natural land forms, that we're not trying to cement neighborhoods in place as they are. First of all, that's not, growth is the only evidence of life. You know, things are going to change. And secondly, the state won't let us. We'll have, we have additional housing things and so forth to accommodate. So I think just respect is a clearer word than that. And I would appreciate some discussion with my colleagues about the first bullet, because it feels like a Rorschach test to me, which is maintain Atascadero's character as a semi-rural community. that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I think as we're discussing this, means for some people this is, you know, semi-rural means that I get to have chickens. And some people it means I have a property big enough to raise horses. Some people says we have outdoor spaces that we can enjoy. So I think it would be helpful as staff moves forward with that, that we flesh that out a little bit more and be attentive to what that means in the more urban parts of our community as well as the more rural parts of the community. Because, you know, it has a different thing in big property areas where you're wanting to accommodate farm animals. It has a very specific rural character sort of ethic to it. And then in our more urban areas, I see that as something that Councilmember Newsom and I often discuss in the Design Review Committee, which is how are the outdoor spaces working? Because it's that magic of Atascadero summer nights and the indoor-outdoor relationship that keeps us grounded to the natural environment here that makes the rural character, even when people are in an apartment building or other setting. So I would encourage us to kick that around a little bit and help staff be more specific about what that means.
So I think tonight we're not trying to be specific. We're keeping that sort of cloud level of, and I think, you know, we've had a lot of discussions and we know what that semi-rural means, and you actually stated it quite lovely. So I don't know that if there's a concern that you have that you think might get missed, could you let us know what that is? Because I don't know that any of us would disagree with that kind of view of semi-rural.
And if that's a comfortable description of semi-rural in how it expresses itself in urban environments and how it expresses itself in, you know, larger lot sizes areas, then I think that that's something that staff probably has heard. If we've got consensus on that, you've heard what you need to hear. We're good with that. If somebody else wants to comment on it, go for it.
I raise my kids with chickens and horses, so I'm mm-hmm. good with the semi-rural. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And we've heard you, and I think you're alluding to what we're going to be doing in policy development, which is great. And I think that's, you know, where a lot of this discussion is going to go. And I guess it's a fine line between having enough and having too much. And so that's all I'm going to say.
Right. And part of the value tonight is making sure we're clear about these, you know, very broad statements. So that if it's something that, I know it when I see it, the Supreme Court once ruled about something, give you a little bit more guidance about what we're seeing so that we're not papering over differences and giving you clear guidance so you can focus your work, you know, on the next phase.
And I think I would ask staff if there's anything in here where you say, you know, hey, council, could you give us a little more direction? Then please ask. Otherwise, we've been through these conversations quite a lot in strategic planning and within the community conversations. So I think we know where we're going with this. But, you know, to your point, Mayor Pro Tem Funk, if there's something where you say, hey, council, we need a little more guidance, please let us know that because we want to make sure that we do get that to you tonight. Are you complete?
I'm complete now.
Okay. Councilmember Warbeau.
I had one word suggestion, but I'm going to save it for later.
Excellent. Look at that restraint.
So, yeah.
Councilmember Darris.
Yeah, no, I had a comment more than a question, but I think these bullet points here, I think, are very good. And I think the semi-rural community feature or description, I think, does fit what we have here. But I wanted to just clarify and maybe just kind of voice is, you know, I have underlined these words that begin most of these statements, you know, that maintain, protect, sustain, ensure, promote, respect, all these things. Later, much later, as you've already discussed, is where these things, like respect the natural landforms, et cetera, that you're going to, that's where the line's going to get drawn. Because like, as Charles mentioned earlier, it's like, you know, who's going to say that, well, in my opinion, didn't respect based on what's going on in this particular development. But I imagine the line will be drawn in a much further, later process than where we're at right now.
Respect will be defined as a policy. And what does that mean to us in Atascadero? And we don't know that yet.
Right. So, I mean, like respect and promote and ensure. I mean, these are going to be much more finely tuned. I mean, because I think these broad statements are great. I think they really cover everything that we have in the city and outlying. So, okay, that's all. I just wanted to make a comment. Thank you.
Charles, go ahead and bring up your word.
I was going to say, along those lines, I was going to say, like, on the last one, instead of respecting natural land, just consider. These are the things we need to consider as part of our policies and when we review things, because I don't want later people to go, well, you didn't respect or you didn't protect. I'm looking for, there to be flexibility in the implementation of these overarching things. And since the mayor told me to go ahead and talk, I'm going to comment on the semi-rural community.
I said say a word.
And that is just because I've been around a long time, been through two previous general plan update cycles, and as a citizen and one time as a council member. And I think there's a reason that's the very first bullet on here, because that's always been a big part of what people think about the general plan in Atascadero, is that we are a semi-rural community. We have a substantial portion of our community consisting of large lots and the kinds of things that Mayor Pro Tem Funk mentioned. And so I think it's important to a lot of people in the community, even though there might be changing definitions of what that is, but it's an important part of the concept of Atascadero that makes it different than any other city in the county and from most cities in the state. Is that you have this, right within the city limits, you can own livestock and, you can own horses and sheep and goats and chickens and all kinds of things. And that's what, people expect. And you're out and you don't expect a lot of city services out there. You don't have a sewer. You don't expect a sidewalk, that sort of thing. And that's why I think that's there and why it's important that it stay there.
Moving respect natural forms to consider, because the devil's always in the details, but as we move into those details, especially in alternatives, a lot of these guiding principles or overarching elements may get implemented differently in different parts of the city as well. And that's a key piece of it. And that gets into the zoning or other policy. And just as an example, and what I mean by this for council's consideration, considering landforms and trees and critical habitat, that's different in a riparian corridor than other parts of the city as well. So the overarching theme in the guiding principle is important, and as you mentioned earlier, we want to make sure we're not missing anything. That's really the critical piece of tonight. But as we go into alternatives, that specificity, but also geographic specificity, becomes more of that detail that we'll be framing later. If that's helpful to sort of think about the verbs as we go through these.
Thank you. And my only remaining comment after all of this is just to, since these are supposed to be that high level, kind of going through in any of the how that's in here to make sure we, remove that and keep it at that higher level. And so we've noted one or two of those, but you'll do that as you go along.
And Madam Mayor, I'm thinking just to let you know how we've pulled it apart. I'm envisioning maybe we'll come back to you and it'll just be guiding principles, but then also a list of here are things that we've pulled out for future policy discussion. I'm looking in particular at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth bullet about, sustain a vibrant downtown core that supports, et cetera, et cetera. That could be a policy. And the overarchingness, if that's a word, could be built into the guiding principle that Mayor Pro Tem Funk mentioned.
Sounds good.
That would work.
We trust you. All right.
All right, only seven more to go.
And I'll quickly add, because I can see it, Roxanne's
doing... We're going to go more quickly now.
Right. Roxanne's doing a fantastic job catching all of these and transcribing all of these policy and more detailed ideas as well. So just want to emphasize we're capturing everything.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Thank you. All right. So now we're on to economic development and fiscal health. This is the only one I'll keep separate. The other ones we'll start combining a bit. So economic and fiscal health, any questions? I will start with Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
I have no questions on this. When we get to comments, I do have
okay. Councilmember Newsom.
I'm good.
And Councilmember Darris?
I have no questions.
Borbo?
No, I'll pass. Thanks.
Okay. So question-wise, I think we're good. And a lot of those bigger questions we got out of the way, too, in terms of how this works. So I'll go ahead and open up to public comment on economic development and fiscal health, which is support local business and employment growth. Welcome to our first speaker.
Hello, good evening. My name is Chris Rodebush, and I represent First Five Slo County in the We Are the Care Initiative. I represent a local coalition of organizations dedicated to the well-being of children and their families. We Are the Care Initiative launched in 2019 and has sparked a local movement to pursue real change in our community to tackle the critical issues. The We Are the Care initiatives have galvanized to collective commitment of families, educators, employers, businesses, local government leaders. So I don't want to berate the point. I think you know that affordable child care has reached a crisis point. And the crisis of this magnitude requires each sector to play a role. And so tonight I want to just talk about the role of local government very briefly. And in San Luis Obispo County, brave steps are being taken across all sectors. So, as we know, the work of cities are built on the priorities established in general plans, including a focus on the need of children and families. We Are the Care partners are encouraged to observe that the city of Atascadero has taken some visionary steps in prioritizing children and families through incorporating child care and early education in its draft general plan vision and guiding principles. So, first of all, huge kudos that the fact that child care is even mentioned in these plan, a general plan update vision and guiding principles. With that being said, in review of the bullet point that does reference child care, as was mentioned above, thinking a little bit more about the what and less about the how, we did want to provide some feedback that the current statement seemed perhaps a little bit too narrow, and opening up the statement to include more innovation would be our preference. So the draft notion, the draft statement that we put out was pursue strategies to increase quality child care and early education as a key mechanism to support the local workforce. Additionally, we took it upon ourselves to dive into the last general plan updates as of 2016, and we're taking this opportunity to propose additional concrete recommendations for language to incorporate in this next iteration that further highlight the needs of children, families, and child care. We provided an addendum of recommendations, and that was submitted to the City Council and staff yesterday. We Are the Care partners stand ready to work for the city in other ways as together we move forward in pursuing a stronger future for our community and the next generation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Rodebush. Nice to see you. And any other member of the public wishing to speak? If you're on the webinar, you can raise your hand. Anyone else in here in the public? I'm seeing none, so I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring this back to council and to staff. And so I will go to Councilmember Newsom, since you are our liaison with We Are the Care and the one with a child of age that might need child care from time to time.
She needs child care along with her dad. Sorry, I can say that today. I'm glad that we're able to go through strategic planning and try to figure out how we create the general plan update as we institute some of these programs, as we try to bring more workforces and families are the core of this community. We need to make sure that the focus is on that so all of us can get up and go to work every day. As many of you know, I usually bring mine in tow when we don't have childcare or when I have to pick up early. So it's fundamental to me that we follow along those steps, and I do encourage that First Five comes and speaks and reminds us that some of us are working moms. So thank you. And I appreciate that this bottom line is in here because it reminds me why I work so hard to give up that time with my family to make sure that our next generation reaps those benefits.
Thank you. And as a mom who's dealt with those challenges of childcare also, a little earlier in my life, I definitely appreciate the real importance here of planning for childcare as part of a whole neighborhood and as a part of a healthy community and a healthy workforce for our vitality. So the one item that I wanted to recommend, in fact, I was looking at before you got up to speak, Ms. Rodebush, I was looking for that letter on my phone so I could quote the exact language, which you've now provided. So I would strongly encourage us to adopt the for that last bullet, the language adjustment that Ms. Rodebush suggested, because I think it captures the element we're trying to get at here. And the rest of it, I think we've done a good job of hitting the high points on the crucial issues of economic development and fiscal health.
Councilmember Borbo?
No, I had a something I overlooked when I said I didn't have any questions. prioritize city financial and operational decisions around the most pressing needs of the community. I didn't really kind of understand that because I would hope we would not prioritize them around the less pressing needs of the community. So
which bullet are you looking
this
at?
This is a third from the bottom bullet under this. It was just too vague for me, and I wouldn't, you know, didn't want to get into discussion of what kind of things we're talking about because, you know, the programs are for later. But sometimes in these kind of documents, we end up throwing in some sort of generic sounding things, and I like to, you know, have less of those where possible. And so I just wasn't sure where that came from or what the heck it means.
I could live without that being in there.
If we could, is there a reason that that's there in particular, or is that something we can take out?
I don't know of a compelling background reason, so I think we're open to suggestions on that.
Okay. So I think we can have a consensus on striking that one.
All right. Altogether, right?
Altogether, yep. Aye, yes. Got it. All right, Councilmember Darris. Okay. I am looking through here, and I want to make sure that in here, I thought we had it, but now I'm not seeing it, that we talk about that jobs housing balance, and that could be elsewhere. Well, yes, and
next to last bullet on the first
one. Yeah, so that's in community character and form, but I think that's, you know, there's that crossover, so just noting that's, you know, that's both, and I think that's critical to be noted within that economic development and fiscal health. I think that's part
yep,
of it.
So let's add that in.
Okay, great. All right, so let's move on to then mobility and circulation and parks, services, and infrastructure. We'll put that together. I'm going to ask a question because I have no idea why in bullet number two under mobility we have this result in new and identifiable gateways to Atascadero. What on earth does that mean? It kind of seems like it was thrown in there with all these other things, and I was kind of unclear on what that was doing there.
I think that's actually more of an urban design topic rather than mobility. It's to create a sense of arrival in Atascadero at these major intersection points or interchange points. And it might be something that's better off in community form rather than...
Is that a guiding principle, though, or is that...
That could be...
Like one of the policies?
That could be more of a policy.
Okay. Okay. So I'm not giving direction right now, but okay. So that's good to know. All right. I will start with Councilmember Borbo on this one. For mobility and circulation, which is prioritize circulation for all modes of transportation and public services and infrastructure, which is maintain and enhance efficient, cost-effective, and sustainable systems.
No, I don't think I have anything because I was going to, but I see it's down in another topic area, so I'll wait.
Okay. Thanks. Councilmember Darris.
Third one down, encourage development that provides job services, goods in close proximity. That one seems out of place in this one as well. I mean, isn't that's more of a community character, maybe, or?
It reduces VMT.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, that's the only thing that kind of stuck out at me for that one.
Okay. Councilmember Newsom.
I'm thinking bullet one and two are probably need to be combined or similar statements, just worded differently.
Under mobility and circulation? Yeah. Okay.
The others I'm good on.
And Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yeah, and here I would concur in dropping that, you know, third bullet of mobility and circulation. As we think about mobility and circulation, I want to make sure that we are thinking about the way in which the whole community links together down El Camino Real and to the park and over to the Prinery, and a little sort of crossbars on the long engagement. As we are in the context of building a community that is less requiring of cars, so that it's not just, and that as we think about the walkability of neighborhoods, which we also address some in the first, in the community form and character section, that we think about encouraging and extending connections to nodes and schools from their surrounding neighborhoods it's not strictly necessarily walkable because our, you know, hills might be tough that way.
We're in questions right now, though.
Oh, okay.
Not so much deliberation because I want to go to the public before we do any more of that. Okay.
Okay. I can come back to that.
Okay, great.
Complete that sentence when we get to comments.
All right. So on the items of mobility and circulation and public services and infrastructure, I'd like to open it up to the public. So if there's any member of the public here that is wishing to speak, or anyone on the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand. Anyone? I see you on the edge of your seat, so no? Okay, all right. Well, we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back. So, Mayor Pro Tem Funk, if you'd like to continue on that.
Sure, so continuing on that thought, that the walkability is not just about pedestrian walkability, but also about connecting in the kinds of low-key transportation modes that may become, you know, be developed or be affordable in the next 20 years. So think about golf carts and little scooters and bikes, e-bikes, those kinds of things that are already on the fray that might make a neighborhood, you know, expand a commercial node and make it accessible for a half mile or more radius too, so that seniors don't have to drive in order to be able to get to a grocery store, that kind of thing. I don't know. So I just think about walkability more broadly and think about the connections that we want to be extending where feasible, connections into neighborhoods from schools as well as commercial nodes so that we're creating that those healthy opportunities for connection and reducing reliance on auto transport. It will always be a challenging city to have no access to a car, but we can make it easier in some areas for some portion of the population, and that will help. It'll give us, you know, be able to move, you know, a little bit more in sidewalks or bike lanes and a little bit less in parking lots.
Under the public services one, I'm just curious on prioritize efficient and cost-effective new sewer connections. How do we do that any differently? What would be different to make it more cost effective on a new sewer connection?
I think that was more in relation to we can't provide sewer out to the west side where you're going up and down 75 hills. That's not a cost effective service. So it was more to try and provide a cost-effective service.
Well, it says within the urban
areas. Curve. Yeah. What's that?
It says within the urban area. So, I'm like, we already provide sewer services within the urban area. Don't we mostly?
We don't necessarily.
What's that?
Don't we mostly?
We do mostly. There are some areas within the urban, certainly within the urban services lines, and even in more of the urban areas where you would be surprised there is not sewer service.
Okay. So, but where it is currently in the urban areas, what can be done to prioritize, you know, efficient and cost-effective sewer connections? I mean, it is what it is, isn't it? Is there something more that can be done to say, well, we're going to make it more or less expensive or whatever, more cost-effective? I'm not sure what. I guess I just need some clarification on exactly what this means.
And maybe this is where it needs some wordsmithing. I think from a staff's perspective, we were just saying prioritize infilling the sewer in the urban area before you expand out to areas that are further out.
Okay.
So maybe we can work on that.
That is actually, and maybe it's more of a, you know, maybe it becomes a goal or something else, but you're right in that we prioritize that rather than those outer areas, and that it might be something that we actively pursue. We're not simply waiting for residents to come and say, hey, we'd like to get on sewer, but we're looking for those opportunities where it really makes sense, and particularly where, you know, potentially our groundwater, you know, could be at risk. And so we want to make sure that we are looking at that and that that's in the general plan somewhere.
Thank you.
Actually, Mayor, I was going to express a concern about that. My earlier thing was, I was wondering about the roads, but it's covered right there in the first bullet of this particular subheading. But I think some folks in our community might have a great deal of concern that this wording means that the city's going to try to force them onto a sewer in a given area. Now, we have to be responsive to, you know, regional water quality control board mandates, and so there are certain areas of the community that, you know, might become like non-compliant or something, and we've looked at those, talked about those with our public works director. And so while by itself it sounds like it makes sense, I think some people might be concerned that, you know, we're going to, you know, force them into a very expensive, you know, sewer project and connection when they're in an area that's functioning okay. Yes, it's inside the urban services line, but that might be a cause of concern to some property owners in our community. So I'm, you know, I'm a little concerned about, okay, what does that mean? What does prioritize that? Are we going to, you know, like the mayor said, be looking for these opportunities? Be great if you got a bunch of grant money, but it's another thing to say, okay, you know,
well,
this neighborhood, we're going to force it.
You bring up a good point, because we do have our local area management plan, our LAMP, and within that LAMP that we have approved by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, we are required to make this a priority and to be looking at options for that. So, but to your point, you know, the city isn't going to be knocking on people's doors and go, okay, we need, you know, $30,000 from you, but I know this isn't the conversation to get into it tonight, but we do need to be consistent with that LAMP in the general plan, is what I would say. And I'm kind of looking at our city manager and our city engineer over there.
And I think prioritization, you know, there's different factions that feed into that. One is, you know, how expensive it is. Is it to extend that sewer out, as the city manager was indicating? The other one is like with zoning. So if you got higher, you know, density zoning, you're going to be picking up a lot more connections on a shorter section of sewer main and everything else. And then also, you know, avoiding lift stations. So those lift stations are very expensive nowadays.
Okay. Thank you. Other, yes.
I do, since we combined two areas, I do have an additional comment. And that's, as we look in the public services and infrastructure, the road, the first item on roads talks about maintaining and developing new roads, but I do think it's important for us to think about aspiring to maintain a consistent functional experience with our existing roads, and, you know, that with that as sort of an overarching principle, something to think about for the policy level is, I do think we're going to need to, sometime within this 20-year horizon, to develop an effective mechanism for facilitated self-help in managing those older non-city main train streets that are found within the urban core. Because as you experience our city, you have parts of it that look like Tijuana, because the street is not a city-maintained street, but it's very... it's one that people are on a lot, and it's very visible within the community. So, you know, with thinking about that as it is a self-help challenge, because the city can't afford to maintain the streets it has, let alone add more. But we also need to think about some way to get some of those streets, make it easier and more feasible to get some of those streets to be a little bit more safely functional within the community and present our overall community experience in a more consistent way.
Good. I have the third bullet under
public services and infrastructure, support the development and provision of power supply and electricity alternatives. Is that, are we talking charging stations and things of that nature? What is that principle? What are we really looking at here?
The guiding principle is to get away from reliance upon fossil fuels for energy.
Okay, so my concern with this is that we are here saying that we're, you know, looking at putting some sort of policy forward that other cities have done and that, you know, possibly the state is looking at that says we're basically banning natural gas in new development. And I don't know that you have a majority here that's ready to say something like that. So that was my big concern with that bullet.
I think another idea behind this principle is also having some independence from the grid. So a little bit of resiliency as well. So building microcells, microgrids, or energy power that is separate from the grid, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't see this as a natural gas versus electricity vision. I see this as, just as Dan said, provide resiliency in alternatives to the grid. And that.
Okay, so I want to ensure that that's what it is, and we're not talking about some other type of policy that is not what we're intending.
Exactly. I think it can be whatever we want it to be, how vague it's written, but you can also write it differently. So.
Okay. Just so that you have that feedback, because
yes. We
don't have a majority of us telling you that's a policy that we want.
Yeah, totally understand. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, but I do think we do have consensus that we need to move forward as a community to be respectful of energy efficiency.
And we are doing that, and we continue to do that, and that bullet is fine, but I want to make sure that one policy is not something that is interpreted
out of this. It's not a stealth agenda of some other kind.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on to the next two, safety and resiliency and parks and recreation. So I will look, I'll start with, I'm trying to remember who I started with first with what. I started with you last time. Okay, so let's go back to starting with Councilmember Darragh's questions on safety and resiliency, parks and recreation. Start at the other end. All right, Councilmember Newsom.
I'm gonna pass.
All right. Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
On the question for the bullet is that's about ensuring that all neighborhoods and business districts are adequately served by fire, police, and emergency services. Would that policy lock us into the idea that every neighborhood, regardless of its geography, would try to have the same service standards? Or are we really talking more globally about we just need to do right by each neighborhood in terms of the risks that are there?
Choice
and its
B.
Character. Okay.
Choice B. Other questions, Councilmember Borbo?
No, I had not highlighted anything, and on rereading it, I don't think I have anything.
All right. And Councilmember Darragh's questions before we go to comment? Okay. So I'll go ahead and open up public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak on safety and resiliency, which is plan and prepare for community safety? We do have a fire chief in the audience, maybe so. And parks and recreation, enhance and leverage our community spaces. So any member of the public wishing to speak? Anyone in the webinar, you can raise your hand. I am seeing no one, so we will close the public comment and bring that back. Any items of deliberation, or are we feeling content with these guiding principles?
I have one suggestion to drop the last one in this as being part of the really more of a policy level, and instead replace that with a statement to ensure and protect.
Which one are you talking about?
In safety and resiliency, the last bullet under there, which feels about the drought cycles and community culture. Great policy. I'm all in favor of that. But I think that the guiding principle here really is to ensure and protect the sustainability of the Atascadero groundwater basin, because that's where we get our water.
Other areas of conversation?
At one point in my mind, when I read that, I thought, why is it even there, since the water company, you know, is responsible for the provision of water, and, you know, they mostly, you know, they've involved in setting up all the groundwater sustainability plan and all that sort of stuff. But I looked at it in the sense that, you know, we have some requirements in terms of the standards we have to apply in new construction, et cetera. So I thought it was okay to, you know, to leave it as it is, but I don't think I have any particular objection to what Mayor Pro Tem Funk said either.
We have a sewer that recharges the basin. We're going to be doing a major overhaul.
Right.
Major overhaul is a understatement.
Yeah.
Complete redo.
Right.
To both points. Other comments between safety and resiliency and parks and recreation? All right. Do you have sufficient from us in those two areas? All right. So now we'll move on to conservation and open space and community health and engagement. I'm going to ask under community health and engagement that it doesn't quite seem like a general plan element. Like you said that these eight things could be general plan elements, and that seems... We think of land use, circulation, noise, housing element. So, of course, you know, community engagement and all of that is at the foundation and necessary for everything that we do. But how is this possibly an element of the general plan?
The community health piece is something that does relate to land use planning and where you put land use relation to parks, relation to the circulation system, and enabling people to get around and thus maintain healthy lifestyles, not getting in their cars. Not required of a general plan, but we heard a lot through the public engagement process about the importance of this, and so it became built towards an element. Doesn't have to be. It could be incorporated into the other elements. With regard to the engagement piece, there are general plans, not a lot, but throughout the state, that have something called a governance element that emphasizes the importance of transparent government, community education. And so it's a policy call as to whether or not the council wants to include these types of things in the general plan. But it's not unusual for them to be in a general plan.
I see. And do you see that there's some crossover within community health? Like, is some of that taken care of over in mobility and circulation, community character and form, economic and development, and fiscal health?
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember.
I think the mayor has an excellent observation here because, again, these documents tend to get long and longer, and you end up start repeating yourself. And they cost more, and they're more confusing for the public to read and for, you know, applicants to decipher and for staff, too. And the more you write, the more likely you are to contradict yourself somewhere. You know, or if not contradict, create confusion. What do you mean? What is it? Is it this or is it that? And for me, in government documents, less is always better and always the challenge. And I mean, I'd be inclined, unless it's a required element.
Let's stick with questions, though, for now.
But okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. My question, I guess, would be, is it a required element? So, thank you.
Nice segue, yes.
easy question, easy answer.
Yeah, right. In the form of a question. Councilmember Darris, questions on these two? No. Mayor Pro Tem Funk, any questions? Councilmember? No. I do have a question under conservation and open space. Recognize and preserve Atascadero's west side as a rural environment. You know, what we think of, I mean, everybody might see the west side as, you know, okay, that's just the hills over there, but the west side is literally, you know, west of 101 is, you know, if you really think about that's west side. And you wouldn't necessarily say that all of the west side is rural in nature. So maybe just as you're going through this, like, how do you see that, how do you see being able to implement that, or does it need to be a little more specific in this case?
That's a good point. And I think what this really touches on is the west side that is outside of the urban services boundary.
Okay.
And that west side that we know we don't really have the ability to change much in terms of density because of its fire hazards, its access, its lack of sewer services. And it's not, you know, it's not going to be a focus topic of this, you know, next general plan. It's going to be more like, how can we preserve that neighborhood character out there
while continuing to provide that area of services. So that's kind of what that's touching on.
Got it.
And so maybe we could define it as the area, you know, the west side of Atascadero that lies outside of the city's urban services line.
Okay.
Or something along those lines.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. That makes it clearer. I also had a question about foster education and lifelong learning opportunities for community members of all ages. I mean, at the city level, we, you know, have yoga classes and arts and craft and dance and things like that. And, you know, we certainly have a relationship with the school systems and things like that. But it almost seems like fostering education and lifelong learning isn't quite what we do here at the city. That's not necessarily our purview. So I didn't know, am I looking at that in a way that is too literal? Is there another interpretation that kind of talks to, you know, what the community's been bringing forward?
I think it's touching not just on the physical health of the community, but the mental health, not mental health, but
what's education?
Educate. Thank you. Tax classes for people who don't quite know how to do their taxes, or things for seniors that might help them that aren't physically related, that would help them preserve a lifestyle and stay mentally healthy. Those are the thoughts behind that.
And okay. I'll add from a city's perspective, a lot of it is around partnerships. And so maybe it's fostering education at all levels of life, but maybe we refine that to have it a tie with economic development, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, is there the right job training and programs, or the city can work on partnerships as part of economic development strategy?
Sure.
You know, or I'm getting as more specificity to what that actually means.
Yeah.
I think I understand what the mayor's saying. Is that a function of the city? And that's a good mm-hmm. question. It might be a function through land use, by preserving land use areas that can accommodate such facilities. And yeah, it's an interesting one. So I don't have any specific guidance on that one. As it's
well, unique. To keep my response in the form of a question, how does this fit into the general plan? I'm not seeing how
it's
this fits into a general plan. The city may do some of these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, we may have recreational things. We may do this and that and the other thing. But I don't understand how this would be a necessary component of the general plan.
Because we have a parks and recreation element. And we want to provide recreational and park opportunities. And it also could fit into the land use element to create policies that say, hey, we need to preserve public zoning so that we have areas for schools and youth in recreational facilities and a skate park and all these kinds of things that are sort of like all those things. So but maybe it's covered somewhere else.
Well, yeah. I mean, you just said, as you said, we have a parks and recreation element, right?
Yeah. So it may be duplicative, may not be necessary. So that's the thing, is we're here to kind of.
And we don't know that public zoning is the best zoning. We're just saying.
I would absolutely agree with
it's
that.
It's very confusing and
we're
going to
be
weird. Yeah,
talking about that tomorrow amongst our staff technical advisory committee.
Following up on this discussion, I do have a question now. If with regards to community health and engagement, since a general plan is a plan for the community and not just for the land and the buildings and the stuff, it's for the people, you know, to as you know, the human environment and designing that in. Can we address some of these things in the plan without them being in a separate element? Because I'm hearing my colleagues to say separate elements a little much, but let's keep the human piece of this, you know, without writing that off altogether.
Yeah, this definitely our general plan policies will go beyond the mechanics of land use and the mechanics of transportation, for example, and get into all these other aspects of human life and every piece that we need in our city. That's what we have to understand. But yeah, these can all fit in different sections.
And I think as you talk about within Parks and Recreation and the first mm-hmm. one with community, I forget the name of that one, but there's other places where this can be kind of folded into.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's do this. Let's go ahead and go out to public comment for these final two sections, conservation and open space, which is protect and celebrate our natural environment, and community health and engagement, support a healthy and engaged community. Any members of the public wishing to speak, raise your hand or come to the podium. I am not seeing anyone, so last call. And if you want to speak on any of the items that we've talked about, feel free. All right, I'm not seeing anyone. We've had a lot of engagement along the way, so maybe people feel like they've said their piece for this portion of it. So we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back. So I think what I'm seeing consensus for is that community health and engagement doesn't need to be its own piece, but making sure that, you know, as you know, my colleague said, that human element is preserved, that we're not just talking about, you know, cars and roads and buildings, that I think the fostering education, I don't know that that even needs to be a bullet. It's probably already compassed in Parks and Recreation, but if you see an opportunity where that's part of a guiding principle, or possibly that is, you know, a program or a policy, but trust you to figure that out. And then the West Side, being specific with that being outside of the city urban services line, I think is important. And whether you want to put open space over with over space possibly with community character and form, might that be so that it, I don't know that it has to be, because right now you've got open space, conservation, and land use are all one element in our current general plan. So I think that that could get folded into something to be a little more streamlined. Other comments?
My comment would be yes, do away with the community health engagement as a separate item. I'm a little skeptical if any of those really belong in the general plan, but to the extent that you think they might, they should be parceled out to the other things. And I think, if I hear you correctly, making a note on conservation and open space, there's only three things there, and they could probably be placed in some of the other ones earlier up front.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with the redistribution of that, of those things. And also on the very last bullet, while I think that the language there is laudable, I think it might be more effective to talk at the higher level to support a culture of welcome, inclusion, and mutual respect, so that persons of all ethnicities, creeds, races, or orientations can live safely and thrive in the community. Including classes of persons once prohibited from owning or living on many properties in the city.
You're wanting to add those words too?
Yeah, I was suggesting that we recognize that language would be more effective than the last bullet, or in addition to the last bullet that's there. It's consistent with the way that we have talked about welcome and inclusion in broader strategy within our city, but calls it out in terms of our strategic, of our general plan.
I thought we were taking the whole community health and
element.
Yeah, I thought we were taking the whole element out.
Right, we're incorporating those human elements into other parts of the plan. So we're not going to do this as a separate element, but we're not going to just ignore the human side of community as we look at the human plan. The plan. It's not just the roads and cars and buildings and stuff.
I thought that's how our city already operated. I didn't know we needed to add that extra. I just didn't see it listed in there as something that needed to be as detailed or wordsmithed in it. I think you understand our direction that we're going, and open for business, all in all inclusive, somewhere in there.
I started writing, and I think this captured it, a lot of the end piece of it too, is support a culture of mutual inclusion and respect.
And that period.
More than came to it.
Thank you.
And I agree. I don't think that level of detail is needed, because I think it speaks to who we already are, and if we want to state that, that's fine. But I think to get further into detail isn't needed and can potentially create problems in the future that are unforeseen. So
yeah, I think we can deal with that level of detail in the policies and programs as we move forward on that.
Let's move on to the vision, if we could just do that briefly. Yes,
just very briefly, because I apologize, I may be the only one that's confused. Are we eliminating both the
Yes, conservation community. And open space is okay. being put within
other things along with
and community health and engagement is being also removed, and if anything under goes under Parks and Rec or something, then
perfect. Yeah. We can do that. Yeah. Thank you. Just want to clarify.
Yeah, no, thank you for doing that. So if we could bring up the vision statement, I don't know if that's able to be able to bring up for the public or if we just look at that here. My first comment on the vision statement, and we can, it's like, you know, are we asking questions? Are we deliberating? I will open this up to any member of the public that wants to talk about it. And we're not wordsmithing tonight. Let me be very clear about that. But I'm going to say this is a lot of words. A lot of words that say a lot of things, and it's almost one of those things that says everything and nothing all at once. And so I'm a little bit concerned that we've just kind of thrown the kitchen sink in here, and it's not a really meaningful vision statement. And I get that because it's a first draft, and we're trying to hone in. But it's a little.
Bear with us while we bring that up. We're going to bring it up right now in just a moment here. And it's a work in progress.
Let's look on page 232. 232, for those of you looking at, there we go, and now we have it up on the screen. So that it is, so it's not that I disagree with anything in there, but it's just, it's a word salad. And I think it could use some definite condensing. And again, without getting into specific words and going through that, but that's my comment overall on that. But happy to, as my counsel's reading that, I'll go out to the public and just see if there's any member of the public. As you're looking at this vision statement, Authentic Atascadero, which I like the title of it, actually, any member of the public wishing to provide any comment on this vision statement as we start this discussion? Which, don't worry, won't last long. All right, I'm not seeing any members of the public, so we'll go ahead and close public comment, and I'll bring that back. So any other colleagues that have any other comments? Councilmember Newsom.
It's so hard with strategic planning. I feel like we went through a lot of words, condensed them, and they all came back to us again. So excuse me if I laugh a little bit. I was like, I thought we've been here and done this, but... So with that in place, are we not allowed to take some of the strategic priorities and wordsmith this back into the vision statement? Because I felt like we were a lot more condensed and a lot more structured with strategic, and it really captured who we were.
I have a quick question on the strategic priorities, the time frame for those two to five-year time frame.
And three-year.
And the vision statement is looking to capture, if somebody were to drop down from outer space 20 years from now or in 2045, what would they see in Atascadero? And that's what the vision statement should be, is it's a statement of a future condition.
So some of the things we went through on strategic planning was our mission statement had stayed a certain way for quite some time, and it just continued to be, I don't know, very detailed. So as we're looking at this for long term, some of what we do at strategic planning doesn't just go away in a couple years. So how do we look at this different for those of us that haven't gone through a general plan update? What is it supposed to say? What it's going to look like in 25 years? I mean, what guidance do you want to give us?
The horizon year for the general plan is through year 2045. So how do you envision the community in year 2045? What does it look like? What is it doing? How does it function?
I should have brought my four-year-old. She could tell you.
So if I could jump in too, that was the exercise we did on our True North statements. What is it? What do we want Atascadero to look like in 2045? What do we want to do that? So we can maybe try and condense it down. We heard that we're on the right mark. There's probably just a lot there. We'll look to our True North statements that we developed in strategic planning. There's a lot of them and a lot of different concepts. So it's going to be longer than our mission statement for the organization, for sure. But try and just be very surgical when we're picking a word and see if we can do some stuff that incorporates some of the work we did on our True North statements. Does that work?
I think that does. Sometimes we try to be too wordy. We try to fit everything and everyone in there, and then you're inevitably going to leave something out. So I get that it will be a little bit wordier than our mission statement. But, again, I'm not going to start saying words because then we're going to start wordsmithing. But it's just it's too much.
I think you grasp
it. You can also, in a weird way, reverse engineer this. The guiding principles we just went through provide that additional detail.
Great.
So it's almost pulling out those just very key themes like the city manager mentioned with the True North statements and having a more concise, even one-sentence vision.
Perfect. We will trust you to come back with that then. Yes. All right. Are we good for tonight? Do you have another comment?
I think that just as we're looking at that vision statement, just to think about this as a city that's a great place to grow up and a great place to grow old. And we, maybe we can simplify this, the rest of this.
All right. Do you have sufficient feedback from us?
Thank you. You guys did a wonderful job. I think we have excellent feedback.
As did all of you. Thank you for setting the stage and guiding us through it. I know we're not an easy bunch sometimes, but we got it done.
I don't agree. I think you're a very easy bunch. And it's been very collaborative.
I was just asking for a compliment, so that's why I said it. No, I'm just kidding. No, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
We will go on to now our council announcements and committee reports. So I will start, I'll go from my right to my left. So starting with Council Member Newsom.
We have a finance committee meeting this Thursday. City schools committee meeting is on the 18th. Design review committee, I believe it's going to meet on the 25th, but it's Memorial Day. Holidays start early. And that's it.
In addition to design review, the Homeless Services Oversight Council will be meeting as a full body on the 17th, Wednesday afternoon. And one of the things that we'll be going over is to discuss some of the particulars that Joseph Svonik, who's the new Homeless Services Division Director, presented to the Board of Supervisors last week. And that includes additional new projects that are being developed, not just in permanent housing, but also in tiny home bridge housing. In Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo and Grover Beach. And we will be discussing the CSAC, California State Association of Counties plan, that and how it relates to what our county is developed and putting together hopefully a statement of support for that.
On that note, I do want to say that in looking over the CSAC, I'll call it a proposal for ease in the at-home and the accountability section, I'm concerned about, and hopefully you can carry this forward at HSOC, but very concerned where it says that cities will be financially responsible for, siting, funding new shelters and understanding counties. That's been one of my challenges with the county, I think, my entire time on council, is they don't seem to understand that we don't have the funding that they do for things like this, and so quite concerned that they're moving in that direction.
Well, I thank the mayor for bringing that up, because that's precisely the conversation that I had with the executive director of CSAC in Sacramento when I was there with the League of Cities and the CSAC, that counties of our size need to leave that responsibility at the county. The cities don't have the funding and they don't have the bandwidth to manage shelters. And part of the provision of that, which he assured me it can be accommodated, is the idea that that counties can make other arrangements as works for them. But the general principle is to align the funding with the responsibilities to get consistent operational funding for this work, so that we're not, in 1 year asking Echo to double in size and then the next year saying, oh, yeah, well, we don't have any money to have you keep that shelter open. That would be just nuts.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get consistency
and
get it.
But I think you and I are on the same page with that. It's knowing that cannot come down to the cities where we don't have that funding.
Right.
It's,
I have been very clear that can't.
Thank you.
Both about funding and bandwidth of management responsibility.
Thank you.
Councilmember Borbell.
Yes. Councilmember Knudsen mentioned the Finance Committee meeting. I would just add that this is the fourth of six Finance Committee meetings where we're reviewing the staff's, the budget that staff has developed. And so it's a very lengthy and thorough process. Tomorrow is Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting. Last week I attended a Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting, but nothing of note to report from that.
Next Wednesday, the Air Pollution Control District meets, and that's all I have.
All right, thank you. I had a Regional Transit Authority meeting last week. They are continuing to work on farebox recovery solutions. The nice thing that has come about is we are now not the only ones that are experiencing farebox recovery issues. Now that the county that SLOCOG and other areas is RTA has experienced this in other areas, it's like, oh good, now there's incentive to do something about it. Before, we didn't have as much support, so that's nice. There's been a delay on the zero emission buses. We were supposed to get those two in summer. It'll be more towards November, and our zero emission bus plan was accepted by the California Air Resources Board. I did want to note that I went to the speak in front of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission last Wednesday night down at the Board of Supervisors chambers. They had an open public forum, and I did go to speak not on behalf of the council. I didn't have that authority, but just on behalf of myself to encourage that when that license application renewal does come forward from PG&E, that would be, obviously safety and everything taken into consideration, but that would be renewed, critical for us keeping the lights on here. So with that, I will ask if there are any I was going to say reportable actions. There's no reportable actions. Are there any individual determinations? Oh, I thought I saw Dan raise his hand. I'm like, no, wait a minute. Unacceptable. I'm not seeing any. All right. Meeting adjourned.